So I'm actually really excited to do this topic. Through you, the world shall be blessed, as our parashir this week, because my Beit Midrash is doing a Shabbaton up north on liberalism and orthodoxy, the Shabbos. And the way we did it was we sat down and said, so what topics would we want to talk about and would we want to hear, and just sort of posed questions and then said, okay, that's going to be the class. But then you have to do the work of actually coming up with something to say. This was a challenge, this one. And I like it, and I'm going to have an oneg on it Friday night, and this is my dry run. So, yes.
That's the one at TK?
That's my TK, you got it. So, well now you don't have to go, because you hear it here. Yeah. But this is a question that has bothered me for a very long time. This issue of through you the world should be blessed. If you take a look at the first source on the sheet, in general for the psukim here, except for one passage from Yeshaya, I didn't provide translation because the whole one page deal. But we'll explain as we go, and you'll see that you have a mission almost that's given to our ancestors in each of those first three formative generations of what would become the Jewish people: Avraham and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov and Rachel, Leah, Bila, Zilpah. You find this mission of being a source of bracha for the world. If you take a look at the first source, you see it with Avraham. It's the beginning of this week's parasha. Hashem says to him, "Ve'eschal goy gadol, I'm going to make you a great nation. Va'avarechecha, I will bless you. Va'agav l'shemecha, I will elevate your name. Ve'hiyeh baracha, and you will be bracha." He doesn't explain what exactly "you will be bracha" means. That's part of what we have to discuss. But then he says, "Va'avarecha mevarechecha u'mekalelcha," or "I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who curse you." Right? The evangelical Christians have taken this passage very seriously. They put that as like a banner at their events for Israel. "I will bless those who bless you," and they say, "Well, we are blessing Israel, and therefore we should be blessed as well." They're very into this. And then the last part of the sentence, the key, "V'nivrechu v'cha kol mishpachos ha'adama." How would you translate that? Right. All the nations will be blessed because of you. Right? Through you, all the nations of the land are going to receive bracha.
And the opposite?
Meaning?
If they do not, if they're cursed?
Well, this doesn't seem to require anything of them at all. In other words, the first half of the sentence, "I will bless those who bless you, I'll curse those who curse you," that's like, if they're good to you, they'll get good. If they're bad to you, they'll receive bad. But this just says, all the nations of the land, all the families of the land, will receive bracha because of you. That's what it says. And then look at the next line. Still within the first source, look at Yitzchak and what he's told. "I will increase your children like the stars in the heavens. I will give your children all of these lands. And once again, all of the nations of the land will be blessed because of your children." And then Yaakov, "Your children will be like the dirt of the land." Right, it's a good thing. Just take it as a good thing. Dirt's okay. I forget who it was who said this, that we're blessed sometimes to be like the stars and sometimes to be like the sand. It's always that there are going to be many of us. However, if we're good, we'll be like the stars, and if not, the sand underfoot. There are other nicer ways to talk about being like dirt. You add water. Water is Torah. It clumps together. Everybody is unified. Fine, we're dirt of the land. Either way, however you deal with that. "Uvaratzta yama v'kema v'tzapon v'negba," you will spread in all different directions. "V'nivrechu v'cha kol mishpachos ha'adama u'v'zarecha," and once again, through you, through your children, all the families of the land will be blessed. So what went wrong? Because, first of all, we can't even get along with the nations around us, let alone having them be blessed. They don't like us, and to be clear, we often don't like them.
But it doesn't say that.
Yeah.
It says that we're going to get along and there's going to be peace.
Right. True. It doesn't say we'll get along. This is correct. So what does be a bracha for them mean? I'm going to highlight the problem with this shortly, but what should they will be blessed because of you or through you? What should that look like?
They gain from us.
No, go ahead.
They'll profit. They'll get the good things, whether it's modern-day technology, whether it's whatever it is.
So we are going to win Nobel Prizes and the world will benefit because we developed good things.
Whatever it is, like inspiration, that like our good deeds and our values will inspire other people to be good and therefore...
We will inspire them. Role models? Maybe.
Yeah, we can kick them out of our land.
Well, that's part of where I'm going with this, right? Because really, if we are a source of bracha for them, I'm not really sure how that squares with us coming into the land and saying, okay, guys, now get out. What kind of bracha is that? Right? This is a problem, at least to me. It's been a problem for me for years and years. I have an answer, which is good. Fundamentally, it's such an important commitment that it's reiterated generation after generation that you are supposed to be a source of bracha. Maybe the answer really is you're going to develop great technology, you're going to develop medical advances, and the world will be blessed because of what you innovate. Maybe. Doesn't sound like it to me, but maybe that's what it is. Let's take a step back. Let's talk about what the problems are here. So your first problem is in source number 2. Hashem tells Moshe to tell Paro, v'amarta el Paro, ko amar Hashem, b'ni v'chori Yisrael. Not only is Israel my child, but it is my b'chor. Right? What does that mean? What does that mean? Israel's my b'chor. Sorry?
Like, everyone's my child, but Israel, like, all people are my children, but Israel's my...
Really my child, because they're my firstborn. Okay. There's an element of closer association with a firstborn, right? Without getting into too much, like, developmental psychology and the nature of firstborns. But just, you spend more time, just, that's the way it works, with the child who you had first. You make your mistakes also when the child you had first, fine. But there's a sense of this is the one who carries on in my name. This is the one who is closest in some sense to the parents. An element of also superiority over the others, not in the sense of being better, but in the sense of having authority over the other children. Right? The firstborn child, the oldest child, is the one who you're going to leave at home at some point with the others and say, okay, now this one's in charge. Right? That's just the way it works. So saying that we are the Bechor already sets up a level of, not opposition exactly, but it certainly assigns to us a level of control, a level of power. But it gets worse.
Also inheritance, yeah. Right? You get
Pishnai. Right? There's a double there's a double portion of inheritance. Let's not forget that. Yeah.
So that's
not
inheritance.
That's
Pishnai, I mean, taking care of the mother, isn't it? Wasn't that the point of it?
That's a nice idea.
Is that? I heard that part, but I was wondering if it was true. That like in case the reason that the brother has Pishnai is because in case if the father dies, then is he obligated to?
I mean, all the children are obligated.
But I thought specifically the Bechor, he goes into that role and that's why he
does. I mean, as a matter of practice, that's going to be the case normally. And the Bechor is usually the one, it's true, who has looked at as...
This is what I was discussing this with, like my anger on how like, I feel like a woman had no like rights. Was on that topic, I'm like, she doesn't inherit anything, right? That's the whole thing.
Yes. So she gets from her parents.
I mean, what she gets is support. Meaning, until such time as she chooses to leave the house, she gets to remain in the house. She is supported by the estate. She receives the ksuba payment, which is not a small amount, right? Meaning, in a standard ksuba of 200 zuz, right? What is one zuz? You know what one zuz is. What can you buy with 2 zuz? Right. With 2 zuz, you can buy a young goat. So with 200 zuz, you can buy 100 goats. That's not bad.
Not bad,
yeah. You can start a farm and, you know, produce goat cheese. The idea that the Bechor may have some level of responsibility goes with the idea that the Bechor is on some level the executor of the estate, and in that sense is going to be responsible to make sure that their mother is taken care of, or stepmother if it's not their mother. You know, either way, yes, the Bechor will carry some level of responsibility in that regard. I don't know about tying that though to the I don't know about tying that to the double portion, because the whole estate is bound for that. You know, all the stuff is bound for that. But take a look at number three. Take a look at number three. Look at this medrash. Har Sinai. This is part of a medrash in Shmos Rabbah that talks about the different names that we find in the Torah for Har Sinai. So the name Har Sinai here is associated with the word Sinah. Sinah means hatred, right? So the Medrash here says in number three, Har Sinai, Shemimena Yorda Sinah Leovde Kochavim. Because from this mountain, hatred descended against the idolaters. Meaning, starting with Har Sinai, when we get the Torah, there is animosity between Jews and non-Jews. Now, there could have been animosity before. What's this Medrash saying?
Could we be jealousy now that we got the Torah?
Is it them being jealous of us?
Oh,
I guess so. Yeah. It sounds like from the Medrash it's us against them. Because until we receive a Torah, we have the same mitzvot that the world does. The same, you know, mitzvah b'nei Noach. It may be true, the Gemara in Yuma says that the Avos observed more than just the seven, and that fits with various psukim. That's its own discussion. But in terms of obligatory covenant and us being in some way religiously different from the world, it's really Har Sinai, and the Medrash places it in the negative. It sees in the name Sinai hostility between Jews and non-Jews, and specifically from Jews toward non-Jews. That's what you're seeing there. And then take a look at number four, which puts it in God's hands. This is a Gemara of which there are three different versions that appear in Shas with this discussion. We are taught that Hashem does not show favor, meaning that God treats everybody fairly. You do good things, you get good things. You do bad things, you get bad things. That's the normal way that that things are supposed to function. However, the Gemara notes Hashem shows favor to the Jews. Amru Malachai Asharei Sefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara here presents it as a protest by the Malachim. They protest to God. Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the Universe. They say, Kasav Bisarascha, it's written within your Torah, Asher Lo Yisaf Anim Velo Yikav Shochad, that you do not show favor, that you do not accept a bribe. Valawat HaNosei Panim Li Yisrael, but you do show favor to the Jews. Dichsiv, as the Pasuk says, Yisah Hashem Panav Elecha, Hashem will raise his face towards you. Now, the truth of the matter is that that's a mistranslation of Yisah Hashem Panav Elecha, meaning that doesn't really mean show favor. It means Hashem will turn towards you. It doesn't mean that he's going to show favor to you. Nonetheless, that's the way the Gemara takes it, because the Gemara is not really concerned about the Pasuk as much as the concept, which is that we are taught Hashem does show favor to us. We are taught that even if we sin, even if we make mistakes, Hashem still is patient with us, he's willing to forgive us, and so on, in ways that we don't find described for all the nations of the world. So the Gemara asks the question, Amar Lam, Hashem responds to the Malachim, Israel, should I not show favor to the Jews? I wrote in the Torah that you should eat and you should be full and you should bench. Right? That's what you're supposed to do. But we go beyond that. We make a bracha achrona after we eat, even if we just had an olive-sized amount, an egg-sized amount, you're not full. But we still make a bracha afterwards. In other words, we go above and beyond, and therefore Hashem is willing to go above and beyond for us. That's the idea. We impose obligations upon ourselves that transcend what Hashem has asked us to do. So when we don't live up to what Hashem has asked us to do, Hashem says, you know what, I'm going to give you a pass. Leave aside the question of whether that's fair or not, whether you can do that kind of accounting. The point here is, and the point for us is, that you see another example of divine favoritism. I'm going to show favor to the Jews. It's more justified, perhaps, than some of the other examples, because it's justified by the fact that we're willing to go beyond. But what you start to see here is an element of favoritism from God, which may run counter to the idea of you're supposed to be a bracha for everybody around you. If you're supposed to be a source of bracha for the world, how do you square that with you have an in with God, God's going to show you favoritism, God is going to call you his firstborn, animosity towards the nations is going to start at Har Sinai. This seems to create sort of the antithesis of bracha, but it's worse than that. Because we have, within Judaism, a very solid, call it hostility, you could call it xenophobia, animosity towards or fear of the people who are around us. Right? The way that we relate to the nations around us doesn't seem to be bracha. So, yeah, it's benign when we say we are Am Levadad Yishko, a nation that dwells on its own. That's a fine, we're a nation that dwells on its own. That's not so negative. But then we have, obviously, the prohibition against marrying them. And then in addition to that, we have the rabbinic decrees to make sure that we don't socialize that could lead to marriage with them, right? So we won't eat the food that they cook, and we won't drink the wine that they touched, and we won't eat the bread that they baked. And then you go beyond that, and you find various laws in the Torah which are described as applying to re'echa, or achicha, or amitecha, right? Re'echa, your friend, achicha, your brother, amitecha, your associate. And those only apply for Jews. Non-Jews are excluded. So, for example, the Torah says you're not allowed to charge interest when you lend money. That's the rule. It only says it for Jews. La'achicha lo tashich, to your brother, not to the world. Now, it makes perfect sense. I'm not arguing with the halacha, meaning the idea that you should only have this rule for Jews is the only way the world can survive. Because, and I think we may have discussed this at some point, what's the term in economics for lending money without charging interest? There's a term for it. Lending money and not charging interest. Right, it's called suicide. Right. That's what you said?
No.
Okay, lending money and not charging interest is suicidal because the best possible scenario is that you get paid back on time without having to take anybody to court. In which case, you have only lost opportunity cost, what you could have done with that money during that period of time, and cost of inflation. But what happens when they're late paying you back? What happens when there's inflation and now the money that you could have spent or could have used a year ago now is worth much less than it is at this point? You suffer for it. You won't do well this way. The Torah's conception of loans is that they are tzedakah. That's the idea of a loan. The loan is you have a farmer who needs to be able to have capital so that he can get equipment or get seed or hire workers to be able to plant the field. He gets a loan in the beginning of the year. He does his planting. He plows. He works. He harvests in the end. And then he can pay back the creditor. You're enabling the farmer to be able to survive. Someone needs to buy inventory for a business. So they take out a loan and then they use that money and they run their business. They eventually sell off their inventory. Now they have proceeds and then they can pay it back. It's tzedakah. That's the way it's looked at in the Torah. But if everybody ran their business that way, you wouldn't get anywhere. That's when you end up with a credit freeze, and that's when the world economy collapses. So I'm not arguing with the halacha that says that you can't extend these favors to everybody. But if we're starting out with a principle which we outlined in three different speeches from Hashem to our ancestors, that you're supposed to be a source of bracha to the world around you, and here you are and you say, well, they're not our brothers, they're not our friends, they're not our associates. I have a law like v'hafta l'reacha kamocha and say, well, that's only reacha, that doesn't apply to them. What kind of bracha am I really providing for kol mishpachot ha'adama, all of the nations of the world? What kind of bracha am I for them at all? Take a look at source number 5. Look at this pasuk. Parshas Veschanan. Hashem tells the Jews when they enter into the land, Unsanam Hashem alokecha lefanecha, Hashem is going to put them before you, v'hi kisam, and you will strike them. Them, those nations you're supposed to be a bracha for. You will strike them. Hacharim tacharim osam. You shall destroy them. Lo sichros lehem bris. Do not make any deals with them. Velo sichanim. And you shall not provide them with chen, which the Gemara has three different explanations for. One of the explanations is what I brought you in source number 6. Hachi kamar achmana lo siten lehem chen. Hachi amar achmana lo siten lehem matnas chinam. Don't give them free gifts. You're not allowed to give them things. Another explanation in the Gemara is, you're not allowed to sell them land in Israel. Whether this only applies to the 7 Canaanite nations or it applies to everybody is a debate within Halacha. But even taking it in the most narrow sense, it only applies to the 7 Canaanite nations. Aren't those kol mishpachot ha'adama, the nations of the land you're supposed to be a bracha for? So I'm completely confused. Yes?
Thanks. I really look at Shema. Like Shema says, if you keep the mitzvahs, then I bring blessings to the world, right?
Yeah.
So maybe it's not necessarily how we interact with the goyim, but like how we interact with Hashem. Mm. Keep our mitzvahs, Hashem brings blessings to the world, and they benefit from the blessings that God brings to the world, right? Don't they say when there's a tsunami in Philippines, it's like a sign to us?
There are people who say that.
Right, there are people. I don't know if you're, but there are people that say that.
You can guess.
Right. That's something I've heard.
Yeah, no, it's a real statement. It's a real statement with a real source. It's right. Just that there are sources on both sides, and I have a hard time with the ones that are in favor of.
Okay, but not even that. Okay, let's say not that. That was just a side point. But like the point is, we keep our mitzvahs, blessing comes to the world. They benefit because they're in the world with us, right?
Right. So that's one approach, right? One approach you can give to this is what Diana is saying, which is to say that it doesn't mean we are giving them bracha. It means that by dint of our existence, because we do good things, the whole world will benefit. It's sort of rising tide floats all boats, right? So when we go up, the whole world is going to benefit. Could be. Does that really sound robust enough, though, to match v'nivrachu v'cha kol mishpachos ha'adama, that through you everybody's going to get a bracha? I mean, it's not bad, and it's one of my possible answers that I would float. It's just, to me, it seems tepid. It seems a little bit weak for what we're being charged with. What Hashem says to Avram, what Hashem says to Yisrael, what Hashem says to Yaakov. You know, it almost seems like if that were really what it meant, God wouldn't have said anything to them. Why does Hashem need to say anything to them at all? It'll just happen. You know, you be good, because I told you to be good. And then, yeah, the world will reap the benefits of having a world in which there are people who keep the covenant, the bris. I think that's hard. What other answers could you give?
Maybe just like the bracha of having a role model and having like a benchmark you're supposed to be.
Right. So another possibility is the role model role. I'm going to come back to that because it's going to feed into where I'm going. So hold the thought. I think it's a good thought. There certainly is the role model concept within Torah, right? Or la goyim and so on. So hold that idea. I think it has to be a little bit bigger than that, but I think that is the piece of an answer. What else can you suggest? You could suggest that, yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you later.
Okay.
That's very novel, but maybe that's... They will bless... They will see us as a blessing, or use... I want to be like them. Well, part of the Or LaGoyim, but interpreting the words, when you were chubacha.
Right.
I'm not sure
I'm forming. Okay. I mean, what you're saying is not far from also this idea of being a model for them, But we're going to come back to that as a piece of the answer. Just there were two other possible answers I think you can give before I get to where I really want to go with it. One suggestion is that all of this distancing and all of the hostility is really not about Jews versus non-Jews. Rather, it's about Ovdei Avodah Zarah. It's about idolaters. So if they don't accept God, then they'll have hostility. If they will accept God, even without becoming Jewish, but they accept the Shabbat Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, they'll do the laws that are common to humanity, that's good enough to earn them our favor. If you take a look at source number 7, the Meiri writes this in a bunch of different places. I picked one. Comment on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. He's talking about various rules that involve not showing favor to those around us. And he says, Harbe ro'inu shem mispalim al shabizmanim elu ein adam nizhar midvarim elu klal. He says, I've seen a lot of people express their shock that no one enforces this today, meaning we aren't hostile to the people living around us, he writes in 13th century France. Vanu gvar be'arnu ikar kavanas ha-sefer al ezo uma hi soveves. Kamoshi idu yimei edayan. He says, we've already explained which sort of nation this Gemara is talking about. As testified by the festivals, the Edim that are listed in the Gemara, which were Shem Kulam Lo'umos HaKedumos. When the Gemara there talks about not doing business with them around their holidays, things like that, those are holidays of the early nations, Shalo Hayu Geduros B'Darkei Hadassos, which didn't follow the law. They didn't follow. Dat can be used, we use it to mean religion, but it really means law. V'hein adukos umasmidos ba'avodas ha'elilim. Instead, they cling to the worship of idols, va'kochavim, and the stars, va'talismash, which talismas is the translation I gave it, probably associated with the word talisman, but I've never looked into the etymology. Shekol elu kayotze bahen heim ikarei avodah zarah. These are the essence of idolatry. In other words, what he says is, these rules, like don't do business with them around their holidays, these are all about idolaters. Not about rank and file people who just happen to not be Jewish. So you could make that argument. What's the weakness in the argument, though? In saying that this will explain all of the different hostility we've talked about? Yeah?
When you have a pasuk that, Asher lo yisafanim le'gashom, like that whole, it doesn't matter, it doesn't really specify that it's only, it still says that God favors Jews.
Right. Still says God favors Jews, not to mention we still won't marry them. All the rules of Bishalakum, Pasakum, Samyenim still apply. Right? That's not going to help you. So, it's a start, but it's inadequate. Another answer you could give is about the time of Mashiach. Maybe we're not going to be a bracha to them now. We'll be a bracha to them in the time of Mashiach. Ultimately, we will be. Like the Pesukim in Yeshaya, which I brought you in source number 8, which describe how, in the end, v'yavachris hayamim, one day, nachon yeh har beis Hashem v'rosh harim, the mountain of the house of God, Har HaBayis, will be at the top of mountains, v'nisamik v'os, elevated above the hills, v'naharu elav kol hagoyim, and all of the nations will stream to it. V'halchu amim rabim, and many nations will go. V'amru l'chu v'na'ale al har Hashem, and they'll say, let's go up to the mountain of God, el beis Elokei Yaakov, the house of the God of Yaakov. Yorenu midrachav, nelcha baruch hosav. He will teach us his ways. We will walk in his paths. V'mitzion teitzei Torah, advar Hashem Yerushalayim, from Tzion shall come forth Torah. Right? That's what the nations are going to say. They're going to want to come learn. And they will benefit from it. They won't have any wars anymore. It'll be wonderful. So you could say that we will be a bracha for them, just not yet. Right now, things aren't so good. Eventually, we'll be a bracha. What's the weakness? Sure doesn't sound like that's what Hashem is saying to them. V'nevrachu v'cha kol mishpachas ha'adama uvizarecha, through you and through your children, the world will be blessed.
Present.
It's now. Yeah, Dasi.
Can you say that when we do good, the world is better? Meaning, the physical world, Hashem bestows goodness on the land.
Right. So that,
the economy and things like that.
Right. So that was what Diana was suggesting before, that that maybe when we do good things, when we do our mitzvahs, then Hashem will benefit the world as a whole.
Right. We'll have good weather.
Yeah. And I think you can make that suggestion. that just via our existence, you could even go beyond that to what we had said in the very beginning. Maybe just the fact that, you know, we work on technology and we develop things and everybody benefits from it. You know, you could even say that. I just think that it's kind of, it doesn't live up to the grandeur of this promise / command of be a source of blessing for the world.
Well, it didn't exist. Like, I mean, Hashem created the world in order to do good. Like, what if the Jewish people didn't exist, like, why would he do good for anyone else? So, like, a lot of the good that's happening in the world is for us, which by therefore extends onto the rest of the people.
So, in other words, because there are people who we call Jews who fulfill a covenant, therefore the world is worth existing. And therefore, everybody is blessed.
Right.
Does that sound like the meaning of "Nivrechu v'cha kamishpacha sa adama"? I hear the concept, and it's true that we have within Judaism this basic idea, right? You can quote any number of Gemaras and Midrashim to support it, that says Hashem creates the world because he wants there to be a Torah, and he wants there to be people who fulfill the Torah. And without it, why have a world? Right, Yom Hashishi, and so on. Like, there, you can absolutely support the idea. I just think that at the end, it's not what v'nivrechu v'cha sounds like. It sounds like it's something more direct. It sounds like it's something that's supposed to be coming from us to the world, and not a situation in which you get the Torah at Har Sinai, and wonderful, along with it comes hatred. It just doesn't seem to fit. I think you have to go back to Parshas Lech Lecha, in the beginning of the Parsha. The Chumash presents to us three different splits among humanity. Three times when a family splits off from the rest of humanity based on righteous, God-oriented behavior. The first time is when? Not Noah per se. You're close to Noah.
Shame.
Right? After the Mabul, and after he brings his carbon, and Hashem says, I'm not going to destroy the world again, and so on. Then Noah goes out and gets drunk. Right? And he's in his tent, and we know the story. Shame is the lead. Yefet sort of joins in, but Shame is the lead. He covers his father. Right? And his father, Noah, blesses him and identifies him with God, right? He says he should be blessed by Elokei Shem, the God of Shem. I find that very striking, right? He doesn't say Elokei Noach. He doesn't say my God. He says the God of Shem. It's like he's making a statement here that Shem is the one who's going to carry on the relationship with Hashem. Cham and Yafes are going to go their own way. That's your first split. Your third split is down at Har Sinai and the entry into Israel, right? We receive a bris, we have a covenant with Hashem, and that's going to be just for us. But there's a split in between, and that's Lech Lecha. When Hashem says to Abraham that he should take his family and leave everything behind, Me'artzecha, Mimoladecha, Beis Avicha, right? You leave your land, you leave the place where you were born, you leave your family and go to this land I'm going to show you. That's a basic split in which we stop being part of what was. Now, the truth of the matter is that the Rishonim are all troubled by the fact that Abraham had already left. Meaning, if you read the Pesukim straight from the end of Parashas Noah, they're in Haran when Abraham gets this command. So Ramban has one answer. So Ramban, Ibn Ezra, Rashi, they all wrestle with this problem. Fundamentally, since Hashem says to Abraham, leave the land where you were born, I feel comfortable saying that he's leaving Aram to go there, even if physically he's no longer living in Aram anyway. But Hashem says to him, and this is what we saw in the beginning, there I'm going to make you a great nation, I'm going to bless you, I'm going to elevate your name. Once you make this split, once you leave your birthplace, once you leave your father's house. So why the emphasis on these different departures? Why does Hashem spell it out this way? Why doesn't Hashem say, go to the land, I'm going to show you? Why the emphasis on all the things he's leaving?
Things don't come back to it. It's a permanent leave.
Okay, split entirely, never go back.
Each one is a break from something.
Each one is a break from something. The land, the family, the place where you were born. There are levels of splits, which I'm not going to spend time on right now. There are levels of the to it, but the bottom line out of it is these are all influences of Aram. The place where you lived, the nation among whom you lived, they're bad for you. This is not who you are supposed to be. And instead, you're going to be a source of bracha. Take a look at source number, what did I do here, 9. Look at Rashi on Vehiye Bracha. Being a bracha. Habrachos nisunos biyadecha. Blessings are in your hand. Arashav hayu biyadi. Until now, Hashem says they were in my hand. Berachti es Adam, I gave Adam a bracha. Es Noach, the Oskar, I gave Noach a bracha, I gave you a bracha. Umay achshav atat barech es asher tachpoth. Now you give brachos. Abraham is supposed to be an agent of bracha. Abraham is supposed to be generous. Meaning, the definition of the word bracha is really, sorry? The definition of the word bracha, and you can read any number of definitions of bracha in various places, but the simplest definition of the word bracha as it's used in Tanakh and as Rashi understands it to be used here, is a gift. While the other explanations are good and appropriate, and bracha as brecha, as a pool, and bracha as berech, the knee, and all of those have their place. But, for example, Yaakov sends his gifts to Esav. He says, Kach no es birchasi asher huvas lach. Take my bracha, which was brought to you. So the midrashim on that say he means, he's trying to say to him, you can accept the bracha that I got from our father. But the straight read is, the bracha is the gift itself. We discussed in Shoftim, way, way back when, if you remember the story, that was a memorable story, Achsa, the daughter of Kalev. So she complained because she was given this dry land. And she says, we don't have any wells, and we don't have any land that we can plant. And she says to her father, Tnali bracha. Give me bracha. It means give me a gift. Bracha is a gift. You could even suggest that when one says Baruch Ata Hashem, what you're actually saying is I'm offering something to God. It's like a karban. It's a statement of karban. But that's further afield. But that's what bracha is. In contrast with the people he's leaving behind. What do we know about Aram? Before we look at number 10. What do we know about Aram? Well, they're probably idolatrous, just because that's the world at that point. What else?
Don't have deaths.
That's Sodom, which comes through Moab, which ultimately is born through that, but they precede Moab on the scene. What do we know about Aram? Who do we know in the Torah is from Aram, besides Aram? Sorry? Lavan. Lavan ha-Arami, right? Not just a trickster. Where does he employ his games? What does he try to do? To amass wealth for himself. Lavan is the icon of greed in the Torah. He's absolutely the icon of greed. Take a look. Take a look at source number 10. I gathered some of the psukim together. This is when Eliezer shows up at the house. Vayihi kiros es hanezem. When Lavan saw the rings, ves hatzmidim, and the bracelets, al yidei achoso, that were on his sister's hands, uchsham oes divrei Rivka achoso, and he heard Rivka talking, lemor ko divrei elai ha'ish, that she said, this is what the man said to me, that he's here and he wants to marry off his master's son, and so on. Vayavo el ha'ish, so he goes out to the man at the well, and he says, bo baruch Hashem, oh, you should come, you who are blessed of God, lama tamod bachutz, why are you standing outside? Because he saw the Nezem and the Tzmidim. He saw the rings, he saw the bracelets, and he said, aha, let me go welcome him in. The next line there, this is after they had already agreed that Rivka is going to marry Yitzhak, and then they had the night, and the next morning it's time for her to go. And then, what does her brother say? Vayomer achia ve'ima. Her brother and mother said, right, this is the medrash about Besuel having died during the night. Teishev hanara yitanu yamim awasor. Let her stay with us for a while. A year, 10 months. Achar telech, she'll go eventually. He wants to renegotiate the deal. Now, you could blame his mother. You don't have to blame Lavan, except that this is so consistent with Lavan's character. Because the next time we find him, is when Yaakov shows up, right? And what does he do? He runs out to greet him. He hugs him. He kisses him. He brings him to the house. And the Midrash notes, this is an awfully enthusiastic greeting, right? And it suggests, why is he so enthusiastic? It's not his long-lost nephew who he loves so much. He thinks he brought money, because that's what they do when they come from Avraham's family. That's what he expects. And then he finds out he didn't get that, right? So he hasn't worked for him, and then he says, oh, you can marry my daughter, absolutely. And the deal is supposed to be, he's going to work for him for 7 years in order to be able to marry his daughter, free labor for 7 years, right? In order to be able to marry his daughter, but that's not enough for Lavan, right? He's going to wangle another 7 years out of it by switching her for Leah, right? That was the next set of psukim there that I brought you. And and when it comes time that Yaakov is ready to leave, right? They do this whole business with the salary where he switches it so many different times, and Lavan's own daughters look at him and say, what a terrible human being. Take a look at what they say here. It's the next to last set of psukim that I brought you in number 10. But when Yaakov says to Rachel and Leah, I'd like to go, but, you know, what do you think? V'atan Rachel v'Leah v'tomarno lo, they said to him, Ha'od lanu chilek v'nachala v'beis avinu? Do we have any portion with our father at this point? Halo nachrios nachshavnu lo. We're strangers to him. Ki mecharanu. First of all, he sold us. Right? He didn't ask us if we wanted to marry you. That's number one. V'yochal gamachol es kaspeinu. And then he ate all of our money. He's been benefiting from you for the last 20 years. Whatever wealth you got, because Hashem orchestrated things so that you wouldn't lose to Lavan, all of that, that's ours and for our children. And so therefore, if God says it's time to go, go. And then, what does Lavan say, right? When Lavan catches up to Yaakov, and he says to Yaakov, you know, you stole my trafim, which he did, side note, whatever, fine, they did take the trafim, he was right about that. But Yaakov unleashes this great rant against Lavan, right? He says, I worked for you for 20 years, I didn't sleep at night, I froze in the cold, I was boiling during the day, if any of the animals lost their young, I paid for it myself, I went above and beyond for you in every way, you cheated me on my salary 10 different times, right? And you kind of think as you read that, like, there's nothing Lavan can say back, right? He's just going to turn around and go home. But he doesn't. Look at the last pasuk there. Vayam Lavan vayomer leYaakov. Lavan says to Yaakov, Habanos benosai. The wives you have, they're my daughters. Habanim banai, all your kids, they're mine. Vatzam tzuni, all your sheep, mine. Chol asher ataroeh lihu. Everything you see is mine. That's Lavan's mentality. And you can't say things like that with a straight face unless you believe it. Like, Lavan actually thinks that he has a right to everything. This is our introduction to Aram. Aram is associated with selfishness and with greed whenever they show up in the Torah. Did I bring it on here? No, I did not bring it on here. Bilam says, Min Aram yancheni Balak melech Moab. Balak brought me from Aram. Bilam is another one associated with greed, right? The house full of gold in order to be able to transgress what God said and to go curse the Jews. There's much more about Aram in Tanakh. They're actually the first enemy Hashem brings against us in Shoftim, is Kushan Rishathaim of Aram, even as they're the first ones from whom we split in the Chumash when Abraham leaves Aram. But the lesson for us, I think, is this split, like the split of shame over the issue of modesty with his brothers and Noah, and like the split at Matan Torah is going to be about a covenant with God, this split teaches us a lesson. It teaches us that we are not to be greedy like Aram, but instead we are to be people of bracha, people who will provide gifts for those around us. That's the ideal. Heye bracha, as Rashi said it in number 8, you will be the one who will provide blessings for those around you. That's the trait, which makes sense, because what is Abraham known for? Chesed. That's Abraham's identity. It matches perfectly. And that, to me, is an answer for our initial question of v'nivrachu v'chal kol mishpachas ha'adamah. What does that mean, that you're supposed to be a source of blessing for those around you? Ibn Ezra writes in number 11, it's found in other sources as well, but Ibn Ezra says, Perush bracha, tosfos tova, adding benefit, adding to others. That's what we're, you know, that's what we are trying to do. Like that Rashi of Behiye Bracha, which I mentioned before. That's the goal. Avram is told that he should give to the nations and to the families around him. Unlike Aram, his ancestors, who did not give. And you see it in the introduction of Avraham when he defends Sodom to Hashem. Take a look at source number 12. When Hashem says, I'm going to destroy Sodom, and then he says, I have to tell Avraham, right? So he says, V'Avraham hayo yihye l'goy gadol ve'atzum, Avraham is going to be a great and mighty nation, v'nivrechu vo kol goyei ha'aretz, and all of the nations of the land are going to, once again, nivrechu vo, be blessed through him. How? Ki dativ l'man asher yitzaves panavas beisoach harav. Hashem says, I love Avraham. He is going to command his household after him, v'shamru derech Hashem lasos tzedaka u'mishpat, that they should practice tzedaka u'mishpat. Mishpat is justice. Tzedaka is generosity. Tzedek is righteousness. Tzedek and tzedaka are always difficult to translate, but here, given that you already say mishpat, tzedaka is generosity. Hashem says that's how Abraham is going to benefit those around him. But here's the key. This is not about unity with those around him. It's about generosity towards those around him. And those are two different things. Yeah, Esti.
Not very generous.
Nope, we're coming back to that. Don't worry, I haven't forgotten. The lack of unity is represented in the fact that we don't marry them, we don't see them as our brethren, they're not us. And yes, there will be sin'ah. There is going to be animosity, because we are the keepers of the covenant, and we believe that what we're doing is right, and what they're doing is wrong. The Medrash is just telling it like it is. That does introduce it. And that also will include favor from God towards those who keep this bris, who keep this covenant. It's all of a piece. But there has to be that attitude of generosity towards them. So take a look at the Rambam in source number 13. The Rambam does something interesting here. There's a little bit of a sleight of hand. He says, Tzivu chachamim levaker cholehem. The Chachamim instructed us to look after their sick, meaning from the nations of the world. V'likbor meisehem and meisei Yisrael. Even as we bury our dead, we should bury their dead. L'farneis aniyehem b'chlal aniyei Yisrael. To support their needy people along with ours. Mibnei darkei shalom. Because of the paths of peace. That's a quote from the Gemara in Gittin. Harei ne'amar, Pasuk says, Tov Hashem lakol v'rachamav kol ma'asav. Hashem is good to everybody. His mercy is on all of His creations. V'ne'amar, and the Pasuk says, Drachea darchei Noam v'chol nasivoseha shalom. The ways of the Torah are ways of pleasantness. All her paths are peace. The Rambam did something very strange in this, and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein calls him on it. To make a long story short, because I think we're getting towards time, and I want to make sure this is clear. The Rambam introduced a Pasuk that didn't belong. Meaning, he started out by saying, the Chachamim instructed us to take care of their sick, to bury their dead, to give tzedakah to them because of Darkei Shalom. That, like I said, is the Gemara. The source for that should be the second pasuk that he brought. Drachei Darkei Noam v'chol nasivoseha Shalom. The ways of the Torah are peace, therefore pursue peace. But he threw in this other pasuk. Tov Hashem lakol v'rachamav kol ma'asav. If you didn't have that pasuk, what would you assume is the motivation for looking after their needy people and their indigent and burying their dead? What would be the rationale? Shalom, which is basically
self-serving.
Well, self-serving, but it's we want to have a tranquil world. We don't want to be fighting with them. They're going to get angry if we only give tzedakah to our own instead of to theirs. So fine, let's give them also. I'm going to walk into the hospital room and I see the person I know there and in the other bed is somebody who isn't Jewish. I better say hello and, you know, see how they're doing also, because it's good human relations. What did the Rambam accomplish by introducing that other pasuk?
Like Hashem.
To be like Hashem, to be merciful. Mercy on them. That's not about let's keep the peace. That's a very different value. That's a value of just as Hashem cares about everybody, you should care about everybody. It's not about some expedient strategy of we want to have a tranquil society. It's about, no, you should care about the people around you. And if they are sick and if they are in need, go look after them. Go take care of them, even as we take care of our own. It's a very different picture that the Rambam is presenting, and it's consistent with the idea of having an attitude of generosity toward them. But as he points out, what about Lo Sechaneim? Sorry.
Yeah.
I apologize. Okay. Sorry. So what about what do we do about Lo Sechaneim? What are we going to do about this issue of not you know, showing favor, which includes not giving free gifts? Take a look at the Shulchan Aruch in source number 14. Asur litein matnas chinam lo'obek hochavim she'eino makiro. You're not allowed to give a free gift to somebody who is an idolater who you don't know. Mutter lefarneis aniyehem. However, you are allowed to support their poor. In other words, tzedakah is fine. What we don't want is the chain relationship. What we don't want is the situation in which you pursue an alliance that sees them as part of you and creates the bond between you. We want you to help them out when they're in need. You know, be a source of bracha. But what we don't want is unification. Similarly, the Rav of Soloveitchik in number 15 wrote a landmark essay called Confrontation. This was at the time when the Catholic Church was making overtures to the Jews and saying, well, we can actually tell the world you didn't really kill our God, which, you know, was progress. So the question was, do we now engage in interfaith dialogue with them? And the Rav was very against interfaith dialogue. He did not believe that you could have religious debate for reasons that are beyond the scope of what we're talking about right now. But take a look at number 15 and what he did say you do. We cooperate with the members of other faith communities in all fields of constructive human endeavor. But simultaneously with our integration into the general social framework, we engage in a movement of recoil and retrace our steps. In a word, we belong to the human society, and at the same time, we feel as strangers and outsiders. It's a dance. Yes, you're in, but at the same time, you're out. You help socially, and you get involved. They're building houses for people who are homeless. They're helping out after an earthquake. You get involved. At the same time, you're not them. There is the element of recoil and saying, we take a step back. And to me, this leads to what is the most important part for me of this whole idea. It goes back to the question that I asked in the beginning. How can you be a source of bracha to them if you're kicking them out of the land? How can you square that? How do the two blend? And I think you have to go back to why they're being removed from the land. Take a look at the next to last source there, number 16. Hashem tells us, don't walk in the ways of the nation I am kicking out before you, because they did all these terrible things, and I was disgusted with them. This is right after the Torah section about Arayos and Avodah Zarah. V'omar lahem, Hashem says, I'm telling you, atem tirshua ad masam, you are going to take their land. V'ani etnena lahem, and I'm going to give it to you, this land that is flowing with milk and honey. I am Hashem, your God, who has separated you from the nations. I am removing them from the land, but I'm not removing them from the land because I want you to get it. I'm removing them from the land having nothing to do with you. If there were no Jews, if we had stayed in Mitzrayim, if whatever, Hashem still would have kicked them out. We get the land because Hashem made a promise to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. It's there. It's also in source number 17. We get the land because Hashem made a promise to our ancestors that we could have it. But what would have happened if the nations would not have sinned? What would have happened if we came to the land with our Torah, and they looked at it and said, you know what, we're going to keep the Sheva Mitzvos B'nai Noach. What would have happened?
Coexistence.
That's exactly right. That was what was supposed to happen.
It was?
Yes, they were supposed to become Gerei Toshav.
Well, some
that was what was supposed to happen.
Didn't some become Gerei Toshav?
Well, they pretended to be.
Like, so the Givonim pretended.
They were allowed to stay because they're
and they stayed. I mean, their story is problematic because they pretended to be from far away, and they would.
But why did you have to kill them? Like, why did you kill them?
You did. That's the point.
You're saying we didn't have to kill them.
Hashem said from the very beginning at Bris Ben Absarim to Avraham, V'dor vi'i yashuvu hena, the fourth generation of Jews is going to come back here, kilo shalem avon ha'emori ad hena, because right now the Amori have not sinned enough to warrant them being removed at all. It's only because they don't buy into it that they end up being removed. And I will go further with it and tell you, we were not supposed to be a weapon of destruction. We were supposed to be a tool of redemption. Because what was supposed to happen was, we come into the land, they see the beauty of our Torah, and they say, we are going to accept the mitzvos b'nei Noach. They did, yes. As the Rishonim records, the Jews actually send messengers before they come in, saying, you have three choices. You can leave, you can become Geirei Toshav, or you can fight. Now, the Girgashi leave, the Givonim play this game, and everybody else decides that they want to fight. But fundamentally, what was meant to happen was not, we destroy them. What was meant to happen was, we influence them, and that's what Hashem says to Avraham. Hashem says to Avraham that you will be a bracha to them because you're going to be an influence. This is going to be your gift to them. You're going to be the one who's going to convince them. And that's what Avraham tries to do, right? That's Avraham's whole mission. I didn't bring it here on the sheet because I ran out of space, but I should have anyway. I should have figured out a way to do it. The Shem Mishmuel, as well as Rav Kook in Arot HaMilchama, write that if not for the Egel, we wouldn't have fought any wars with the Canaanim. If not for our Avera, it's our fault, they would have been so impressed by who we were that they would have accepted and become Geirei Toshav, and that would have been it. That was what was supposed to happen. It wasn't supposed to be, let's demolish everybody. We were meant to be a source of bracha. That was the way it was supposed to be. Not unity, to become part of them or to become like them. It requires that we retain our own identity. But it means that we leave Aram behind, and the idea that it's all for us, and say, we are here to give, to be, you know, Stephanie had said it before, to be the role models for them. That's the idea, and so to be a source of bracha for Kol Mishpachot HaAdamah, for all the nations of the land. That's the idea. All right. Thank you. I don't know how I'm going to do that in an oneg, because you can't speak.